And 107.5 FM, W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Mark Remillard. President Biden hunkered down at Camp David, taking part in full 90-minute mock debates in preparation for next week's presidential debate between Biden and former President Trump. Trump not doing mock debates, but sources say he's held a number of policy meetings with Republican allies. A bipartisan push in the Senate to designate Russia a state sponsor of terrorism.
It would make Russia even more of a pariah state. That if you wanted to do business with Russia after we make them a state sponsor of terrorism, you do so at your own peril.
Republican Senator Lindsey Graham. More cases on tap at the Supreme Court this morning. Justices have a little more a week to go with more than a dozen opinions to hand down. South Korea summoning the Russian ambassador to protest the country's new defense pact with North Korea. This comes as South Korea fired warning shots Thursday to repel North Korean soldiers who crossed the border. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
Civic Media News. I'm Carrie Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The state law library will be renamed for Lavinia Goodell, the first woman lawyer in Wisconsin. Goodell moved to Wisconsin in 1871 and drafted a bill to guarantee women the ability to practice law in Wisconsin, which became law in 1877. The law library was named for former conservative Justice David Prosser. Turning waste from factory farms into fuel may not be the green energy boon its supporters say it is. Chris Hunt is a researcher for the Socially Responsible Agriculture Project. He says biogas doesn't solve the problem.
If we put money toward biogas, we're essentially helping to subsidize and further entrench industrial livestock production.
Biogas supporters say anaerobic digesters can be responsibly regulated. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The Brewers bow to the Padres.
Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers with a 7-6 loss to the Padres in San Diego. The Padres jumped out to a 4-1 lead in the first. In the seventh, the Brewers had a chance to tie the game with bases loaded, two outs, but pinch hitter Gary Sanchez striking out. Then, bottom of the ninth, two outs, two strikes, and Jake Cronenworth with a walk-off homer against the Brewers' Yoel Piups. They'll play again Friday night. Other baseball headlines, the Brewers have lost another pitcher for the year. 25-year-old Robert Gasser, a promising fastball pitcher, has opted to have Tommy John surgery on his sore left elbow. He's going to be out for a year. NFL, the Packers claim place kicker James Turner off waivers from the Lions. Turner kicked for the national champion Michigan Wolverines last season. And just how good can Jordan Love be?
I got to be honest with you. I think the guy's a stud. He is going to get paid. They may have already even pretty much agreed. They're just probably just waiting.
That's former Packers left tackle David Bakhtiari with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
And here's Heather with the weather.
Well, it's beautiful out there, sunny and 75, almost a little chilly in the shade. Now let's get a read on the inside of your car. It is hot. You've only been parked a short time and it's already 99 degrees in there. Let's not leave children in the back seat while running errands. It only takes a few minutes for their body temperatures to rise, and that could be fatal.
Cars get hot fast and can be deadly. Never leave a child in a car. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Maggie Dawn.
Next up, I'll be talking with Professor Mary Ellen O'Connell of the Notre Dame School of Law. We'll be talking about the law of war and how it applies in Gaza.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Showers and storms possible today, a high near 72. Some of those storms could have heavy rain. We're talking an inch or two of rain possible today. Another inch or two possible tonight with showers and thunderstorms, a low of 67. For Saturday, scattered storms and a high near 77.
Right now, it's 62.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
It is absolutely disgusting for conservatives to suggest that because someone is poor or struggling, that they lack judgment. If anybody needs morality policing, it's rich folks, for crying out loud, not people who are struggling to put food on the table and keep a roof over their heads.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Dan Schaefer joins us at 10:33 from the recombobulation area. Take your dog to work day. We talk to the executive director of Hawes. Join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
It's a Friday. Welcome in. I am the fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke. This is the Midwest Farm Report. That's Keith Urban you're listening to there. He's one of the artists that's going to be performing at this year's Summerfest. I'll tell you what, if you're planning on going to Summerfest or doing anything outdoors this weekend, you might want to pick and choose exactly when you're outdoors. We've got anywhere from a tenth of an inch of rain to more than a half an inch of rain that's in the forecast from now until the time we talk on Monday. Today's daytime highs right around 83. Tomorrow, showers and thunderstorms. No two ways about it. Daytime highs on Saturday around 80 degrees. Sunny on Sunday, looks like it's going to be pretty dry, 79. And then Monday, sunshine, 84 degrees, before another chance of rain starts occurring on Tuesday. Stu Mocker, ag meteorologist, has got all those weather details on the way, about 15 minutes down the road. We're in fair season around Wisconsin as well. And while you take in the food, the festivities, the entertainment, there's an awful lot of information behind the scenes that you might otherwise miss. Volunteers, special projects that a lot of people dedicate time and energy to. Aubrey Schlimgen, our summer intern, has got a really cool story out of Hustisford, Wisconsin, over in Dodge County, about a family that started out helping 4-H kids that were interested in leather works. Today, it's helped them expand their business model, and they're still serving those same kids. Stick around for that one. And up next, Stephanie Hoff is on the way talking about swarms. No, I'm not talking about insects you've got to be worried about. This is agriculture technology coming to farm fields near you. Swarms of drones helping farmers get control of everything from insects to plant diseases, right on through to plant nutrients. Drone swarms. That story next.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
Rural Mutual Insurance is a proud sponsor of the Northern Wisconsin State Fair in Chippewa Falls. As a thank you for your support, they're giving away fair tickets. Visit ruralmutual.com/win and enter to win tickets to the Northern Wisconsin State Fair.
Rural Mutual Insurance. Keeping Wisconsin strong.
Instead of multiple tractors driving through farm fields, you may start to see multiple drones. The Federal Aviation Administration, or the FAA, has planted the seeds for multiple large drones to be flown over fields. These are otherwise known as drone swarms. I'm Stephanie Hoff from the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison. Preston Rice joins us. He's the co-founder of Madison Area Drone Service. They specialize in agricultural drones. He says this rule change for agriculture can bring benefits to the industry, such as reducing inputs and costs. First, I ask him just how prevalent drone technology is in Wisconsin agriculture.
It's growing significantly. Right now, about 5% of all farmers or farming type operations are beginning to utilize these small drones for doing work on the farm, whether it be the imagery side of things or actually spraying and spreading, which is now being done by the drones. Just kind of a little fun fact, in comparison around the world globally, in other countries like in Asia, where the rules are not quite as hard as they are here, they're up to about 80% of applications being done by small drone. So we've got quite a ways to grow.
I mean, you touched on it a little bit as far as examples, but who is best served by a drone and for what purposes?
Yeah, that's a good question, and that's really changed over the years. So if we back up a bit, they really came out more popular in the kind of photograph and video side. But over the years, we've been able to use the other technologies that go along with that, like using drones, using the data that comes from them. So now we can do mapping. We can actually pull data and measurements out of that imagery that we have. And not only that, we're taking the drones beyond the camera and using the attachments. So we can do, you know, LiDAR imaging. We can spread seed by using a granular spreader. We can do sprays with the liquid tanks and the pumps and all the other technology that comes with it. So the idea of what a drone can do has expanded over the years.
The FAA did clear what they're calling drone swarms for agricultural use. What is a drone swarm in agriculture?
Sure. Well, and I'm very happy to say, first of all, the larger drones don't sound like a big angry bee nest. So that's already a good step in the right direction. As far as what swarms are, I mean, really, it's just like it sounds like. We want to be able to operate more than one aircraft. And we can do that already, but we need to have that ability with one single pilot. So the limitations that we see, especially in the agriculture side of things, is the capacity and the size of that tank, right, can be multiplied if we can operate more than one aircraft at one time. So getting the FAA to kind of give us the approval in that direction is really going to help us expand the ability to make one person, one pilot, much more effective with the equipment that they have.
And now that you've gotten the go-ahead, have you seen a difference already in which, you know, maybe a farmer is purchasing more than one drone, or maybe a custom operator is purchasing drones?
Yeah, well, certainly. I mean, as far as like a go-ahead, that's a bit of a loose term right now because the FAA is very slow to adopt things. But what we have now is sort of that green light to say, hey, if you do want to operate more than one aircraft at one time, we've got, you know, kind of the steps and the groundwork in that might allow us to do that. And so we are seeing that with existing operators that maybe have one or two already. They're looking into that and think, well, how many more could we use and operate? And, you know, as far as like using these drones for a use case operation, our larger units are going to do, you know, around 50 acres per hour. So if you kind of take that term 50 acres per hour and think, well, could we do 200 acres per hour? You could if I had four, and so on.
So are these drones like synchronized all together, or do you have multiple remotes you're working at once?
So the ones that support swarming, which is most of them, really it's all just down to one remote controller. In fact, you have to look at it this way, is we're not actually flying it. We're really just there to take it off the ground. We're going to fill up the tank and switch out the batteries, but the drones are doing everything by themselves. So when you have, say, three or four drones flying at one time, they're just following a coordinated path, like a pre-programmed flight path, and you're just there to kind of keep things in track and tend to it, but it really doesn't need us for the most part.
Drones aren't cheap. How is a drone cost effective, especially when you decide to bring on multiple drones to the farm?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, drones certainly aren't cheap, and especially not the agriculture units, but sort of ironically, they are the least expensive option when you're comparing other methods of spray and spread application. So think about all the costs we have in, say, ground equipment, running a tractor, pulling that pull-behind sprayer, all the maintenance costs that goes with that, and just the limitations that we have with that sort of, you know, vehicle as well. And then compare that to, say, airplanes and helicopters and things like that, where we could buy, you know, 10 or 20 drones for the price of just even a very cheap helicopter, let alone, you know, like an agriculture sprayer airplane. That's a whole nother level. So while they are expensive to most people, for people that need them, it's actually one of the least expensive options that they have, and actually one of the most effective options they can purchase.
Have drones been able to replace equipment in some cases? And do you have an example for a time that it has and been successful?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I like to look at it and think that a drone isn't necessarily a tool that's going to replace everything. It's like a tool in a toolbox. But just how good that is and how many times you reach for that tool is kind of what we're starting to see with the drones and how effective they are. So they are being used in some cases to completely replace existing machinery for the reasons already stated, the cost benefit, that, you know, more precision and having that kind of in-house capability. But we're seeing them replacing other equipment for the reasons that the other equipment doesn't do well. So for example, let's look at like a ground-based equipment, which is probably one of the least expensive alternative options to a drone. But if it's raining like it is today, the ground is wet. We can't really go out there effectively without slipping and sliding or sinking. And not only that, we're running over, you know, the thing that we're trying to grow. So it doesn't make sense to go out there and run over a certain percentage of it to maybe improve a certain percentage of it. The drone can fly over seamlessly and do that without any problems. So we are seeing the evolution of drones taking over existing equipment.
Has this been able to work across commodities? I assume from what you've said, it sounds like row crops drones are really effective, but is it all row crops? What about specialty crops here in Wisconsin?
That's exactly where they pull ahead. Believe it or not, most people think that they're not being used for large row crop operations, but about 70% is being used for those large grain crops. But the other, say, 30% or so is being used in those use cases. So say, like, if you had an orchard, we can actually spot spray and identify the specific trees rather than just blanket spraying. That's one thing that we can do. And also just any other types of agriculture, I've even seen it being used, say, for like working with the DNR, doing invasive species control, where we're going out there and very specifically isolating a spot and just doing that spot spraying or a spot treatment. So we have a lot of use cases that goes beyond the row crops, and that's where the technology really helps pay off. It really pays off both ways. Where you got large row crops or if you got a small orchard, it's all benefits that operation.
Preston Rice along with us. He's the co-founder of Madison Area Drone Service, explaining that the Federal Aviation Administration has made the first steps in greenlighting drone swarms. This means one pilot can operate multiple drones to replace the work of multiple tractors. As drone usage grows across Wisconsin farms and commodities, Preston says Midwest Nice now translates to how you pilot your drone. He says as the industry grows, so does the importance of safe and polite flying. He says even though the rules and regulations say that you can pretty much fly wherever you want, it doesn't mean that you should.
You kind of can, just in the same way I can drive a car any speed I want. Whether you should or not is a different story. But, you know, with that being said, the drones themselves are becoming, we'll say, easier for the operators to not get themselves into trouble. For example, back in 2015, a drone flew into the White House lawn. So that was kind of a story that hit the headlines, like, wow, wait a minute, these things are doing stuff that we didn't know they could do. Well, with the products we have right now, that would be almost impossible to do. They have built-in geofencing that's going to help keep them from getting into situations like that to begin with. But other things that they help you with is, for example, maybe limiting your flight altitude to a legal altitude. You as the operator, just like we drive a car with to look out for pedestrians, we also have to do the same thing as a drone pilot and make sure that we're not flying over people or putting the drone in a potentially hazardous situation.
Are there particular things to be aware of, like if someone has a no trespassing sign outside their home, does that pertain to drones?
That's a good one. So people aren't going to like my answer to that because you don't own the air, unfortunately. So if you own property, you own the property and you own that space, but all of the airspace, even a foot off the ground, is basically governed by the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration. Now, however, that doesn't mean you can just go fly a drone or private property all day and not expect some consequences. I like to call them like the common sense rules, right? So just like I could go outside and put my camera over my neighbor's fence and videotape all day long, it's going to be a problem. Right? I can do that, but it's not going to go well. So same thing with drones too. Yes, you can fly over private property, but you need to use common sense. Should you be there? Are you causing a disturbance? And are there other things that could be hazardous that you don't know about?
Can you leave us with tips for flying politely?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is to, really know the equipment that you're operating. And before you even get to that level, just like we don't hop behind a car until we've got a learner's permit, finally a driver's license, we need to know the basic rules and regulations. So take your time and study up on that. Even if you don't need that, we'll say drone pilot's license, the Part 107, even if you don't need that, you still should study for it because it's really going to help you understand how to be a good, safe pilot. And beyond that, again, always keep those common sense rules in the back of your head, and it's going to go a long way.
Preston Rice is the co-founder of Madison Area Drone Service. They work with customers across the state on their agricultural drone needs. He gives us a sample of some do's and don'ts when it comes to piloting your drone. From the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as Ag Meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
From the heart of the St. Croix Valley, we're in touch with you. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, Amory's radio station.
At Civic Media, we encourage active political engagement and remind listeners to think critically about political advertisements you may hear during this critical election year. Our stations are licensed by the FCC and are required to accept all ads for federal candidates. We also air state and local candidates, as well as paid ads from issue and PAC groups. Truth is rarely as simple as any political ad may claim. So again, we urge you to think critically about what you hear in the spirit of promoting authentic and respectful civic dialogue.
Nightline with Pete Schwabba.
What is the worst movie franchise? Do you have one, Conrad?
What are your thoughts on Transformers?
I saw one Transformer movie. I think it was the first one. I didn't even know what the hell was going on.
I can't get into them anymore because, it's the same every movie now.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be nice if you knew which Transformer. I know there's, testosterone and overload and whatever
testosterone. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Matt Nair on air.
I've never played this game. Uno is great because kids can play against adults without being overmatched, and adults can play it together and still have fun.
Robert from McFarland flipped a table during an Uno game.
Maybe this is why I don't play these games.
Oh, I would love to play Uno with you.
You want to have an Uno fest?
Yeah, that would be awesome.
We could, like, have an Uno fest for charity or something?
That'd be cool.
Matt Nair on air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, Natalie Yar from the Capital Times joins me to discuss film incentives in Wisconsin. And as always, Max Inc. host Terry Barr shares some great new music.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
When you get to the fair, I know it's all about the food and the fun, but pay attention to some of the exhibits that are there as well and the stories to those exhibits. If you go to the Dodge County Fair later this summer, you might see some beautiful leather work, and it may be connected to a company called Emmett Saddlery out of Houstonsford. Our summer intern, Aubrey Schlimgen, caught up with them, talking with one of their partners, Chuck Starr, about a very special project they undertook to help a farm gal that took a fall and ended up paralyzed. Sydney Mel from the Wanakee DeForest area decided she still wanted to try to ride, and that's where Emmett Saddlery got involved.
Well, first of all, we needed to decide what was needed to keep Sydney in the saddle due to her paralyzation, and how we were going to do that and make it comfortable for her to ride as if she didn't have any issues. Oh, we designed the saddle so that if Sydney wasn't riding the saddle and someone else wanted to, we designed it so that her backrest would be removable and it could still be used as a saddle by any person who didn't have her disability.
But the bottom line is, Sydney Mel got up in the saddle thanks to Emmett Saddlery, and it all started as part of 4-H conversations at a fair. Just one of those things to think about when you're walking around this summer. Time for our Compure Financial Ag Weather Update. If you're walking around, be it Summerfest or be it the fair in Elroy, Stu, might as well plan on taking an umbrella, huh?
Yeah, get ready. There's a lot of rain in store for us and really moving in. Flood washes in store from west central right across south central Wisconsin. Not the southern edge of the state, not under the flood watch. But we expect with a warm front moving up out of the south, there's going to be a lot of rain falling yet later today and even later Saturday. I'll have forecast details right after this.
Wisconsin soybean growers have lots of choices when it comes to selecting seed varieties. If you're a seed dealer, help make their choice a little easier by shining the spotlight on your products through the Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. By entering customers in the contest by the August 31st deadline, seed dealers will receive $100 for one grower, $200 for three, and $300 for five or more. Growers must complete an entry and harvest form to qualify. For more information, visit wisoybean.org.
All righty, Stu, how about you bring us that forecast for the weekend?
All right, with the showers and thunderstorms in south-central Minnesota moving east along a warm front, expect the skies become more cloudy. West first, east later today, showers and thunderstorms developing. A lot of indication of half to three-quarter-inch rains falling at least today, with temps in the upper 70s and low 80s. Still some rain through the nighttime, could be another up to half and three-quarters of an inch, especially in the southern half of the state. Upper 60s overnight. Tomorrow, back to that mostly cloudy sky. Afternoon showers, even storms, localized heavier rains, upper 70s. And then it should still stick around for Saturday night. By Sunday, sunny skies, mid and upper 70s, a lot more comfortable, Pam. And we stay a little drier finally Sunday and Monday. But we could get very wet here as we head through this afternoon and tomorrow.
Yeah, and yesterday I had my route. I went Beaver Dam, Keewaskum, West Bend, and back. And there's already a lot of ponding on those fields. We sure don't need to saturate it further.
Right, and that's got a lot to do with the whole situation because of the standing water in so many spots from western to eastern Wisconsin, especially in that southern half of the state. You add another inch and a half to that, and it's a real big problem.
Yeah, really big, for sure. All right, buddy. Well, we'll see what the rainfall reporters bring us today and through the weekend. Catch up with you on Monday.
All right, see you then.
Stumacher, ag meteorologist with your Compure Financial Ag Weather Update on a Friday. Compure Financial is your financial partner, whether it's agriculture or rural life. Plus, they've got great resources available to you online and at your local offices. All you need to do, pop on over to their website. That's compure.com. And don't forget, coming up, talking a little bit more about what's happening in those fields.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Jahnke.
Connecting with you on air, online, and on the Civic Media app. This is Lake Air 1260 AM, WLAK, Amory's radio station. The big winners are in for the Scotty Summer Contest.
Exciting. Let's listen to the calls.
Hi, who's this?
Story.
You're one of our grand prize winners.
All right, man. Great to hear this morning.
We got some good news for you.
Okay.
You are one of our grand prize winners.
Really?
Yes.
Awesome. Winning is fun. Just ask Tammy from Baraboo and Tori from Kewaunee.
Thank you. That's great.
Listen for future chances to text and win on your local Civic Media radio station and the app.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this. Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Brian, do you buy your tickets on Ticketmaster?
Whether I want to or not, I do.
Fella Devan, we're going to talk a little bit about monopolies.
Live Nation and Ticketmaster together control 80% of the primary ticketing market. They have the market power to bully people into submission. And then you trap consumers into basically having to pay like junk fees that are basically created to create profit for the company.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Nightline with Pete Schwabba.
What is the worst movie franchise? Do you have one, Conrad?
What are your thoughts on Transformers?
I saw one Transformer movie. I think it was the first one. I didn't even know what the hell was going on.
I can't get into them anymore because, you know, it's the same every movie now.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be nice if you knew which Transformer. I know there's, like, testosterone and overload and whatever they, you know.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
ABC News, I'm Mark Remillard. President Biden hunkered down at Camp David, taking part in full 90-minute mock debates in preparation for next week's presidential debate between Biden and former President Trump. Trump not doing mock debates, but sources say he's held a number of policy meetings with Republican allies. A bipartisan push in the Senate to designate Russia a state sponsor of terrorism.
It would make Russia even more of a pariah state. That if you wanted to do business with Russia after we make them a state sponsor of terrorism, you do so at your own peril.
Republican Senator Lindsey Graham. More cases on tap at the Supreme Court this morning. Justices have a little more a week to go with more than a dozen opinions to hand down. South Korea is summoning the Russian ambassador to protest the country's new defense pact with North Korea. This comes as South Korea fired warning shots Thursday to repel North Korean soldiers who crossed the border. This is ABC News.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The state law library will be renamed for Lavinia Goodell, the first woman lawyer in Wisconsin. Goodell moved to Wisconsin in 1871 and drafted a bill to guarantee women the ability to practice law in Wisconsin, which became law in 1877. The law library was named for former conservative Justice David Prosser. Turning waste from factory farms into fuel may not be the green energy boon its supporters say it is. Chris Hunt is a researcher for the Socially Responsible Agriculture Project. He says biogas doesn't solve the problem.
If we put money toward biogas, we're essentially helping to subsidize and further entrench industrial livestock production.
Biogas supporters say anaerobic digesters can be responsibly regulated. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The Brewers bow to the Padres. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers with a 7-6 loss to the Padres in San Diego. The Padres jumped out to a 4-1 lead in the first. In the seventh, the Brewers had a chance to tie the game with bases loaded, two outs, but pinch hitter Gary Sanchez striking out. Then, bottom of the ninth, two outs, two strikes, and Jake Cronenworth with a walk-off homer against the Brewers' Yoel Piups. They'll play again Friday night. Other baseball headlines, the Brewers have lost another pitcher for the year. 25-year-old Robert Gasser, a promising fastball pitcher, has opted to have Tommy John surgery on his sore left elbow. He's going to be out for a year. NFL, the Packers claim place kicker James Turner off waivers from the Lions. Turner kicked for the national champion Michigan Wolverines last season. And just how good can Jordan Love be?
I got to be honest with you. I think the guy's a stud. He is going to get paid. They may have already even pretty much agreed. They're just probably just waiting.
That's former Packers left tackle David Bakhtiari with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time as our old friend Peter Rapine of EPOM's World stops by with a lighter look at the week in review. Do not miss it.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Showers and storms possible today, a high near 72. Some of those storms could have heavy rain. We're talking an inch or two of rain possible today. Another inch or two possible tonight with showers and thunderstorms, a low of 67. For Saturday, scattered storms and a high near 77.
Right now, it's 62.
Look up cheese curds, you'll find this basic definition. Wet pieces of curdled milk. Well, it should also include the word delicious. As we continue to celebrate June Dairy Month, do you know how much milk is needed to make 1 pound of cheese curds? 16 ounces, 64 ounces, or 160 ounces, 10 pounds of milk? The answer coming up.
It actually is a sound of freshness.
Rachel Kerr is talking about squeaky curds. She's with the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin and a bit of a cheese nerd.
Those elastic protein strands rub against the enamel of your teeth and create that characteristic sound.
The squeak turns stretchy when battered and deep fried. Some believe the idea to fry globs of cheese happened by accident. I consider it a happy accident. Okay, did you guess? It takes 10 pounds of milk, which is a big gallon jug plus a little bit more, to make 1 pound of squeaky cheese curds. Call me your curd girl for this slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
This broad reaching, well, we can't help people because we can't control how they spend the money, somehow magically doesn't apply to billionaires, doesn't apply to corporations who dodge their taxes every year. The only people who are subject to the conservative morality police are poor people. How dare you?
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Say you never give in to a meltdown and never fill your feed with kid photos. You say you'd never put a pacifier in your mouth to clean it and never let them run wild through the grocery store. So when you say you'd never let them get into a car without you there, no, it can happen. 1 in 4 hot car deaths happen when a kid gets into an unlocked car and can't get out. Never happens. Before you leave the car, always stop. Look. Lock. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Nightline with Pete Schwabba.
What is the worst movie franchise? Do you have one, Conrad?
What are your thoughts on Transformers?
I saw one Transformer movie. I think it was the first one. I didn't even know what the hell was going on.
I can't get into them anymore because, you know, it's the same every movie now.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be nice if you knew which Transformer. I know there's like testosterone and overload and whatever they, you know.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Wisconsin's home for daily conversations about the state's latest headlines and stories. Weekday mornings from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Yeah, there's another artist that will be performing through the course of Summerfest. That's Amy Grant. Welcome back, everybody. I'm the fabulous Farm Bay Pam Yankee on a Friday. This is the Midwest Farm Report. Well, we are talking that weather is going to improve as the weekend unfolds. Today might be a little soggy, a little dreary. Daytime highs for today expected to be around 83 degrees. That seems to be the real challenge for Wisconsin, trying to find any sunshine. Moisture is plentiful today, probably a quarter to a half an inch of rain possible. More showers and thunderstorms could develop overnight. Might even see an inch of rain accumulating overnight. Tomorrow, maybe some showers and thunderstorms during the day, continuing into the evening hours. And then Sunday, it looks pretty nice. Sunshine on the way, 79. Monday, sunshine, 84 degrees. So today is the 21st day of June. What can I tell you? Let's see. On this day in 1856, the very first vessel left Milwaukee for a European destination. It was loaded with over 14,000 bushel of wheat and headed to Liverpool. So it left on this day, 1856, finally arrived September 29th of 1856. Just think about that. And that was probably pretty fast for that date and time. Happened on this day back in 1856. On this day in 1949, Southern Wisconsin's very first drive-in movie opened. Highway 26 Outdoor Theater, Milton Avenue in Janesville. The screen itself, 33 by 46 foot. First of its kind in Wisconsin on this day in 1949. And happy birthday to actor Chris Pratt, 45 years young today. And now you know. Cool, wet weather has really dominated Wisconsin so far this growing season, and that's presenting our Wisconsin farmers with plenty of problems. Coming up on August 7th, there's going to be a crop tour unlike you've probably ever seen before, specifically taking a look at the planting technology that we use in the spring and its potential impacts on the yield results we see in the fall. Fendt has partnered up with McFarland's in Sauk City for their August 7th crop tour, inviting folks to come out to Maize and Bacon Farms just north of Sauk City off Highway 12 on Highway 60 to take a look at their field demonstrations where they've lined up different planters and basically let you see the results. I was out there this week with Jacob Leverich. He is one of the product specialists with AgCo Fendt. And he said, really, this crop tour, it's going to tell it like it is.
Pretty happy with what's been happening, but field conditions, of course, with the spring, it's been challenging with some of the weather that we've had. So it's going to give us a very, very interesting plot come this this August when we come and get to knock down some plants and get into the field and really see what we have. And taking it to yield will also be a real fun time, I think, to see just exactly what's what the different processes that we put into place out in the plot are going to result with. So for example, there's a few different things. We did a downforce trial, so we're using Delta Force from Precision on the planter, of course. And then, of course, with that downforce, we also had our load logic system. So the load logic allows us to distribute the air pressure on the tires, or lower the air pressure on the tires and distribute the weight of the planter bar across the entire bar evenly. So should help to show us some better results when it comes to compaction in the field, reducing that compaction and giving each of those plants a better chance to get up through the soil. So along with that, we also did some things with row cleaners, which should be very interesting. The planter that we were up against here was a Great Plains Twin Rose with no row cleaners. So being able to see that direct side-by-side with row cleaners, no row cleaners, and then the different positions of row cleaners. So having too light, too heavy, and then just right in terms of how much cleaning effect and how much force we were putting down with the air pressure. Now, of course, all of these different functions are controlled directly from the cab, right from the 2020, the Precision 2020. And there's so much you can do and see from that monitor. It really helps. As you're going across the field, it's great to be able to see all the individual maps. I can pull up my applied downforce. I can pull up singulation, my SRI. What it really does is it gives the operator a good chance to be able to monitor what the machine is doing and how exactly it's performing. So if we do see different changes in performance, or let's say we see different soil conditions, it allows the operator to see the change and then make a change if it's necessary in order to make sure that that planter is still running at 100% efficiency. So
it's spontaneous. That's the part that I'm really impressed with. I'm looking at a field now that's got different varied rates of residue, for example. And then there was manure applied in certain areas at certain times that made a compaction problem to begin with. The operator is not responsible. The machine is intuitive and reacting.
Correct. Yeah. So if you look, especially when you look at like our downforce systems, right, we're reading multiple times a second in terms of the weight on the row unit and then adjusting with that Delta 4 cylinder. So that really goes a long way in terms of making sure that we have good contact to the soil with the planting unit, that we're not bouncing the units, and that we're getting a good ride behind the machine. And when you have a good ride, it's going to come right down through that seed tube just right down to the soil, and we're going to have really good singulation, really good placement, and making sure that we have consistent and proper depth so that we're getting consistent and even emergence. So those two are very, very important, and that Delta Force does an excellent job at making sure that it's going to be very consistent across the length of the bar, across the length of the field once we get out.
Thanks, Jacob. Pretty cool story to watch unfold, especially this growing season. Jacob Leverage speaking with me there, one of the product specialists with AgCo Fendt. That crop tour is slated for August 7th at Mays and Bacon Farms. That'd be just north of Sauk City, brought to you courtesy of Fendt and McFarland's in Sauk City. All right, we'll see you there. Well, this morning, what do I see in the markets? Actually, they're gaining a little momentum today. Remember, about 11 o'clock Central Time is when we are going to pick up our latest milk production figures. I think a lot of folks are curious to see how Wisconsin's been doing with milk production, how the rest of the states in the major milk producing groups have been doing. In overnight electronic trade on a Friday morning, December corn is up a penny right now at 4.58. November soybeans up two at 11.19. July wheat, that's unchanged right now, 5.73 a bushel. Yesterday, our dairy product prices saw barrel cheese drop a penny to 1.93. 40-pound block cheese down 0.75 cents, 1.85 and a quarter. Double A butter on Thursday dropped 2.75 cents, still at 3.08 a pound. Now, the July Class 3 milk that goes into cheese this morning, up 21 cents at 19.98. The August Class 3 milk, that is 8 cents lower, currently at 20.51 a hundredweight. You know, if you've got a sick animal, you have a tendency to turn to professionals when it comes to taking care of those animals, right? A veterinarian? Well, no matter small animal, large animal, specialists like equine or dairy, we're having a difficult time getting those veterinary specialists in Wisconsin. Next week, Tuesday, they're going to have a special event at the Badger Veterinary Clinic in Janesville to point out just how important veterinarians are today as well as in the future. Dr. Scott Spaulding, who is a co-founder of Badger Veterinary Hospital in Janesville, is very passionate about UW-Madison's School of Veterinary Medicine. He said even as a professional himself, he still relies on the vet school for resources.
You know, we rely on the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine for our veterinarians. You know, the demand for veterinary services is just enormous right now, and we just don't have enough veterinarians to respond to the demand for veterinary services. So we're looking at, you know, partnering with the veterinary school and the University of Wisconsin in any way we can to increase the number of doctors that they're graduating to go to work in Wisconsin veterinary practices.
Dr. Scott Spaulding, who's co-founder of Badger Veterinary Hospital in Janesville, he is going to be hosting a special event next Tuesday celebrating 175 years of impact that the UW-Madison campus has had on the state, specifically agriculture. And he said he really wants to focus in on the School of Veterinary Medicine.
You know, this year they're celebrating the 175th anniversary of the founding of the University of Wisconsin. And I think what we're trying to do is just highlight the impact that the University of Wisconsin has across the entire state. And, you know, the first class went, started in the veterinary school in, I think, in the mid-1980s. So it's been there a long time. It's been there almost 40 years. And there's been a recent large addition to the veterinary school that is just opening up this past spring. They've more than doubled the size of the veterinary school. And I think that's one of the things in conjunction with the 175th anniversary is just to recognize that accomplishment and the impact that it has locally.
Very true. Dr. Scott Spaulding, he is one of the co-founders of the Badger Veterinary Hospital in Janesville, acting as host on Tuesday for this special celebration. Starting about 2:30 in the afternoon, they'll be giving some of the community guests tours of the Badger Veterinary Hospital. There will be some special guests from UW-Madison as well as the vice chancellor there to talk. And more importantly, just a great time to raise awareness about UW-Madison and the School of Veterinary Medicine. So many in the state of Wisconsin, both for their pets as well as for their livestock, need those resources. Coming up next, your resources are limited when it comes to the growing season of 2024. How are you doing with soybeans? The Soybean Yield Contest looking for you. Details on that next.
Sign up for daily agriculture updates by joining our email list. Head to MidwestFarmReport.com, enter your email address, and we'll handle the rest. More farm news straight ahead. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
Like smelt fries and music on the river, we're uniquely Amory. This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, Amory's radio station.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. A new report outlines the types of harassment and intimidation we may face in the 2024 elections, how to identify it, and the legal remedies to address it. It's a report you should share with your local election officials. The Brennan Center for Justice compiled a bewildering list of tactics being used by anti-democracy activists bent on intimidating election workers and suppressing voters. It includes blockading, following, menacing, or shouting at voters or volunteers, intimidation by poll watchers or rogue poll workers, intimidation by door-to-door canvassers or via online messages or telephone, intimidation by law enforcement officers or by bringing guns to polling places, and by harassing election workers online or in person. The report helps election officials identify these tactics by giving recent examples of each, such as the armed vigilantes in Arizona staking out ballot drop boxes, poll watchers who interfered with election operations using mass challenges to suppress black and brown voters, and door-to-door canvassers intimidating New York vote-by-mail voters last summer. Some intimidation is harder to identify, such as when the wearing of a firearm in the polling place becomes intimidation, or how the placement of police officers in or around a polling place can cross a line. We've linked to this important report for you to share with your local election officials from AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Nightline with Pete Schwabba.
What is the worst movie franchise? Do you have one, Conrad?
What are your thoughts on Transformers?
I saw one Transformer movie. I think it was the first one. I didn't even know what the hell was going on.
I can't get into them anymore because, you know, it's the same every movie now.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be nice if you knew which Transformer. I know there's, like, testosterone and overload and whatever, testosterone.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. John Peterson and Gordy Young.
On our next show, Rocker will be in the studio with a Max Inc. preview.
And we'll have another edition of Johnny at the Movies.
First thing in the morning.
The John and Gordy Show. Weekday morning, 6 until 8. Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
Seed all across the state. The Wisconsin Soybean Promotion Board wants to encourage growers to think about entering this year's Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. And while it does provide bragging rights and a little financial reward to the ultimate winners, the real winners are all Wisconsin soybean growers because we learned so much through the data collected. That's what I talked about with Dr. Sean Conley, University Extension soybean specialist. He also administers the Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. And he said, really, researchers pay a lot of attention to the data that they get from those yield results.
Yeah, Pam, what I really learned from the yield contest is that farmers are always trying innovative new technologies out there in the field. And what they can do then is basically see how they work in these smaller field situations, which is the yield contest. And that information then comes back to me and is relayed to farmers through our different work groups and through them, you know, just having those conversations at Corn Soy Expo. And what's really cool about that is we can see the diversity of ways that farmers can get to these high yields. And a lot of times we see farmers that, you know, are still planting at 30-inch rows, or they're doing no-till, or now that we have the plant green contest where we're seeing more farmers planting green. I think there's a lot of different ways that farmers can get to that 100-plus bushel yield potential. And this gives farmers that opportunity to experiment and learn from each other.
Well, it's not like we're making them commit to, you know, 100 acres to enter the yield contest. Those experiments can take place on smaller parcels.
Right, Pam. So usually, like, our contest comes down to, like, 2.5 acres is roughly what we need to harvest. And, you know, farmers don't really want to putz with 2.5 acres. So they might do, like, half a field or part of a section or something like that. But again, the good thing is it's a large enough space that they can try these experiments and then learn, like, wow, this stuff really worked, or this stuff, well, maybe it's 50-50. And what really helps them learn on their own farm and also community growers is that they can look at the price of an input cost and say, okay, in a high year, this might be worth it. You know, the risk or the ROI might be worth it. But in a tighter margin year, like we're walking into in 2024, they're like, eh, maybe this isn't something I need to be putting on, you know, all my acres. So that's really an important part, is just having farmers be able to expand that knowledge from a smaller part of a field to all their acreages and learn from that.
We're talking about the Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest, and you have plenty of time to think about it and evaluate fields. Our entry deadline doesn't come up until later this summer, actually almost early fall. Dr. Sean Conley, University Extension Soybean Specialist, in studio with us. WISoybean.org can also get you to the yield contest information, as well as Dr. Conley's site, coolbeans.info, if you're already set to find out details. Sean, let's talk a little bit more about the details that you garnish, always kept in confidence. So don't worry about that kind of thing. But you gave a rundown on the different categories that are now a part of the Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. That is a direct example of how you use the information to tweak the contest and try to reflect what growers are doing.
Yeah, Pam, what we try to do is really learn what farmers are doing and be able to develop innovative categories within the contest to really be more reflective of what farmers are doing, you know, in the field and behind that farm gate. And I think that's what really spurned this plant green part of the contest. We've done a lot of work, both myself and Dr. Damon Smith and Dr. Rodrigo Worley, looking at how cover crops impact weed biomass, impact, you know, diseases, insects as well, and slugs as well. But one of the big things we're really obviously pointing at is how does this influence yield? And if we can really come up with strategies that farmers can integrate cover crops into the system, help with these other pest management related issues, but also don't have an impact to yield, that's pretty important. What we've seen, not just here in Wisconsin, but across the Midwest, is most of the time, if farmers are well-equipped and have the planters set up right, we can plant green, terminate like right at or right after planting, and not have any yield impact whatsoever, but also help our herbicide efficacy program by controlling weeds by having that cover crop biomass out there. So what's really good is farmers can then implement this on the farm and then tell their neighbors. Because we all know in the ag community, Pam, I could sit up there and speak till I'm blue in the face, but a couple farmers talk over a beer at the Corn Soy Expo, and boom, they change their production practices. So that's pretty cool.
It's true. All right, let's talk a little bit more about some of the extra categories that are in the Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. The name's a little deceptive, Sean, because you've created other categories reflecting things like quality. You mentioned the green. Tell them a little bit more about that.
Right. So for the plant green part of it, is just that farmers, any farmer that's out there wants to plant green. And what I mean by that is you have a standing cover crop out there. And for that matter, it could be maybe it's a winter wheat field that you decided to terminate, or you pre-planned and went out there and planted some cereal rye or another cover crop, be able to kind of plant right into that standing and established cover crop biomass and then terminate it after. So that's one of it. The other one that's kind of exciting that I really like is basically the new participant category. Because, you know, sometimes you look at the Yale contest and you have the same winners every single year. You know, they've kind of understand and they figured out the rules and how to really, you know, maximize their yield. So it's exciting to have new participants come in and give them the opportunity to actually win in an area and then kind of learn from that and be able to kind of push some of these farmers that have been doing it for over a decade. And that's what I like to see. I like to see new farmers win and push some of these, you know, senior members that have been in the contest for a decade. So it's fun for me and it's fun for all these new farmers coming in, you know, into agriculture. We have this new generation coming in, Pam, and I think they like playing and putzing around out there in the field and learning new things as well.
Yeah, for sure. Dr. Sean Connolly, University Extension Soybean Specialist and the administrator of the Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. Now, they're accepting your entries now. Remember, if you're a farmer, you're welcome. If you're a seed seller, encourage your farmers to be involved with the yield contest. There's financial benefits for you as well. You can go to wisoybean.org and get the details. wisoybean.org or Dr. Sean Connolly's website, coolbean.info. Have a great weekend.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matinair on Air.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 10 till noon on Lake Air 107.5 FM and 1260 AM WLAK and on the Civic Media app.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Recognizing the pros and cons of having kids do farm work. That's next on Farm to Fork. If you're ready to try a highly effective microbial soil inoculant, then Rizol from ProGrow Bio should be your first choice. Rizol offers multiple benefits, like enhanced biomass, bigger yields, and improved soil health. 100% organic and works with conventional or organic crops, and comes in a soluble dry form for easy handling and long shelf life. Search the web for R-H-I-Z-O-L from ProGrow Bio.
Hey there, it's Mike Rowe, and if you're out there getting dirty, do me a favor and remember to call or click 811 before you dig. And when I say dig, I refer to any activity requiring boring, tilling, drilling, probing, reaming, plowing, drudging, or even scoping. Anything that causes you to roll up your sleeves a little and dig in requires you to first connect with 811 so that you can avoid all those buried pipes, wires, and cables underground. To sum up, call or click 811 before you dig and visit safeexcavator.com for more information.
While having kids participate in farm work can be a good thing, there's also a downside. That's been a focus for David Schwabel. He's director of the Youth Safety Lab at the University of Alabama at Birmingham.
There are plenty of negatives to adolescents working in agriculture. I'm going to argue there's some positives as well, because I think we all recognize that getting all youth off farms is unrealistic. So I think we need to weigh the pros and cons, the positives and negatives, and find the right balance for each family and each policymaker.
Schwabel says working on the farm can help kids develop mentally and physically and help them learn to be independent, which is good. And he adds, work is much more productive than playing video games. Though, says Schwabel, it also takes time away from things like school homework.
We need to make the best decision for the family, and that's what I would recommend. A parent deciding whether or not to let their adolescent, broadly defined adolescent, go do some work in an agricultural setting.
Schwabel's comments and those of my show guests the past 2 days were from a webinar done by the National Farm Medicine Center. There's a link to it on the show info page at NorthShoreProductions.com. That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
Pat Kreitlow.
Friday morning, we'll ask Jim Santel to sum up the latest rulings from the Supreme Court before they end their current term. Plus, Mark Jacob and Dan Schumacher.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday morning starting at 6.
It's official. Governor Tony Evers proclaims this June is Pride Month in Wisconsin. But did you know the state has a long history of activism alongside LGBTQ plus communities and allies? The Civic Media Radio Network supports the impact and celebrations and is sharing thoughtful stories all month long.
Bob Neal and Edgar Hellum fell in love in the 1930s. But they also fell in love with Mineral Point, Wisconsin, where they worked together to rescue and restore buildings set to be demolished. The gay couple gave Cornish language names to those properties. The best known may be Pendarvis, a piece of history from the mid-1800s when Mineral Point was a lead mining town. Their success during the Great Depression is considered the start of what's turned the area into an art and tourism hub. It's a story of love and preservation, and you can still experience it today thanks to Bob and Edgar. I'm Terry Barr. Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Russia's ambassador to South